Pickaxe.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. What's up? Welcome to the Triforce Podcast.
Hello.
We're all sick. Well, I'm not actually sick. These two pussies are sick. We almost didn't even do the podcast today, but they're here. They're going to power through. So let's give them a big hand. Lewis Empyrean. Good job, guys. Woo-hoo. Come on. I knew you could do it. I knew you guys could do it. I knew you guys could muster up the strength. Get it together. That's right. Dust yourselves off. Put your helmets back on. Get back in the game, motherfuckers.
So, I've just got a bit of a sore throat. It's been off and on, and I don't know what I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm fine otherwise. P-Flex, yeah. What's up with you? Have you got like some various child sickness that rotates around from one of the grimy, gross, snotty kids?
Exactly.
I think
my youngest was laid low for like 3 or 4 days by it. And she like got it just towards the end of half term, started to have an awful cough, like rattly chest. She sounded like an old timey steam engine, like one of the really early ones that they were working on.
A chuffer.
But they hadn't quite perfected the technology yet, so it didn't do much. It just made horrible barking noises. That was pretty much her cough.
Man, when your daughter was sick, I don't know if your kids do this, but my kids seem to like, it doesn't bug them when their throat is... You know, like sometimes you get really phlegmy and your voice goes all like old grandma-y, raspy, right. I've been smoking for 80 years sort of thing.
Mm.
When my kids do that, they don't bother to clear their throats. They just keep talking.
Like, hey, dad, can I have a cheese string? And you're like, come on, clear your throat. I can't even understand what you're saying.
Yeah, they just don't even understand that simple.
They don't care, yeah. They're just funny, whatever. Yeah.
She learned to blow her nose, which is a big one. Otherwise, they just sniff all the time, and I'm like, that makes you sicker.
Yeah.
Got to blow your nose. So now she's cracked it. She can do the nose blowing, which is good.
Oh.
Well, yeah, that's an important skill, life skill.
Learning to blow your nose. You don't even realize knowing to clear your throat when you're going and blowing your nose.
This is very gentle though. You shouldn't blow your nose like a trumpet. You should be gentle.
Well, my son, when you say blow your nose, you put the tissue up to his nose and he just like goes like crazy. Like I sometimes think like more than just snot's going to come out. Like he blows super hard. But then my daughter doesn't know how to blow her nose, but she sees my son doing it. So she wants to copy him.
Right.
So if you put if you say to her, like, come blow your nose, she'll run over like all excited and everything. And then if you put the tissue close to her nose, she just goes,
yeah.
I think she's doing it. It's pretty funny.
I feel like when I get sick from something now, like in the past, it used to be, I'd always know I was getting sick because I got that thing at the back of my throat where you could just feel germs just settling in. And you think,
you can feel them like writhing around.
And you think,
stuff.
Uh-oh, I get the impression something bad is going to happen here. But now, because I get so many different germs all at once from all these damn kids, and they're mutated germs that they've been on the playground of like life, you know, they're just going from person to person. They're like running from ride to ride. It's like when they go around the classroom, the germs come in and it's like they've been to a theme park and it's closed. No one else is in there and they can just go on every ride and they're just hopped up on sugar and they're just charging around. So the germs get to me and it's a totally confusing mix of symptoms. Like one day I'm okay. The next day my eyes are running. Mm.
Do you ever get that thing in the middle of the night sometimes when your throat is really, really dry? And so there's like a dry patch in your throat and you wake up coughing.
Yeah.
And you're like swallowing, trying to like lube it up and get rid of
that
it or whatever.
That was last night.
Do you know what that actually is though?
Go on.
It's a spider in your throat.
Oh, is it?
They crawl in, yeah. Sometimes they crawl like up in through your nose or whatever, and they get like quite low down there.
And he was just trying to get out.
And they get stuck and they try to aggravate you a bit and stuff. And yeah, so that dry patch isn't actually
a
dry
a
patch at all.
Throat. I had spider
it's a
throat.
Spider just got right up in there, yeah. He's just in there.
That's a damn shame.
He was exploring. He just wanted to see what was down there.
Doing spider things.
Just found a cave and he was like, I'm going to go check it out. And then next thing you know, you're swallowing and killing him. So
I don't like the sound of that. What if it was Spider-Man? What if that's how he got started? He didn't get bitten by a radioactive spider. He's just swallowed so many spiders at night. He sleeps with his mouth open right near a really old piece of furniture that spiders live in. And they just always, every night, they're like, let's go, lads, down the mouth
chute. His great-grandfather's armchair just like sleeps next to it with his mouth wide open.
Peter, if you eat many more spiders, you're going to turn into a spider. Oh, Grandma.
It's too late. Oh, shit, man. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's how all superheroes get started. Yeah. You know, maybe they're just subjected to something over and over and over again. And that's what gives them their power. Their body just mutates, like, according to the environment or whatever.
And I like that.
Boom. They become superheroes. That could be like a thing, though. Because that's like, nowadays, we don't like superheroes to be too super, right? Like, we like them to be strong. But we like them to have like more human characteristics and have weaknesses and stuff like that as well.
I think they have to suffer emotional turmoil, like millennial level emotional turmoil. What's my place in the world? And you know,
I don't understand.
My parents are so mean and all that. Yeah, that's literally their life. It's just half of comics now is people staring at the moon and looking gloomy and thinking, "Oh, I wish I didn't have all these amazing superpowers." My parents.
Hey, on the topic of the moon, though. Well, you heard, right, about these seven planets?
Oh, yeah.
That they found.
And I saw your quip. I'm not sure Lewis checked Twitter in time.
What's this?
He said that maybe now there's a chance you'll get a girlfriend there, Lewis, because they found seven new planets and one of them might be habitable.
It's increased the odds, right?
Sevenfold.
Like now there's like even more of a chance. You might.
Man, I'll take those odds.
You might hook up with a chick, yeah.
Thank you, Sid.
So, they found seven Earth-like planets in like the Goldilocks zone of this dwarf star thing. Yeah. And but they're 39 light years away. So.
I noticed that they were all like super close to the sun. Okay, because it's such a cool star, right?
Yeah,
it's a big red dwarf. They're all like I think Earth is one astronomical unit away or something
that's
like that.
That's 1 AU. That's what we define as 1 AU is our distance.
So it's the distance, but they're all sort of 0.01 AU. Like they're like we're pretty far from sun. To be fair.
Yeah, but if it's not, it's about 2,000 times less bright than our sun, apparently.
Yeah,
right, but so is it
it's very big. It's a cool star. It's still fucking hot, but it's cool.
So is it
going to
be in the sky? Be like a massive.
It would be
red...
big in the sky, yep. And because the planets are so close together, when you look up in the sky, you'll see all these planets, like the way we see the moon, you'll see all these planets.
That's
amazing.
Cool, man.
And because,
that's like some Tatooine shit right
it is,
there.
It really is. And because of their proximity to the sun and the speed that they are orbiting it, they think they're probably tidally locked. So one side of the planet will have sunlight, the other will be in relative darkness. So it would be incredible to look up and see that view. And I was thinking how that would change your appreciation for, you know, the solar system of like that was this magical thing. I mean, it would be incredible. Because ours, with like the fact that the moon...
Well, I mean, God put those planets there for a reason, right? Like we have to figure out why. You know, we'll get there one day.
And they'll be like, maybe we could build a really tall ladder because it's that close and it looks that big. I reckon you could do it. I just wonder if having that amazing view as your society evolves, you would think, wow, we're just meaningless, nothing. We're just a speck in this universe. Or whether you'd think, fuck yeah, we got the best planet ever. We are amazing. I don't know what think.
We here on Earth have had the moon forever to look at, and it hasn't stopped us from thinking that we're the fucking best. And
yeah, but look
and
at the moon,
shit
dude.
About anything
Let
else,
me tell you
so.
About the moon. It's tidally locked, right? You only see one side of it, and I think that sort of it's like a big flat plate that just hangs there. And I love the moon. Don't get me wrong. I love our moon, but dude, we're talking about seeing like six planets and a giant sun all in perfect like orchestra.
Yeah.
And it would just be ridiculous. And each of those planets would be visible like a friggin' moon in the sky. And you'd just watch it and think, oh, this is mad. I mean, it's, you know, it makes our moon look like a peanut by comparison.
But how would we get there though? Because it's like, they say it's close, but
it's
not close.
This guy on Twitter says to me, it's still a long way away, period.
It is though. I mean, 39 light years, that's fucking far, man. Like, like,
no, that is nothing.
Nobody's getting out there.
That is nothing.
So the thing is, though, if there's seven planets there, like abundant with new resources and potential for profit and all that kind of stuff,
no.
We'll probably find a way to get there pretty soon, no, so I'm sure.
Potentially habitated.
Well, habitated.
Right? I mean, all right, guys, I get it. It's a long way. I get it.
Don't
it's a long
light years will take us hundreds and hundreds of years to get there.
Right. With our current technology, the important fact is that we've found in, like, this is like our neighbor, okay? In terms of the galaxy and the scales involved and everything, this thing is like, oh my God, I didn't even know that this Sainsbury's Express was here. Like, and it's just around the corner. Unbelievable. It's so convenient. Nice.
Those blueberries.
I mean, all right. It's still a bit of a walk. You got to go down the road, take a right, take a left. And, you know, sometimes crossing that big road is a bit tricky, but it's closer than you thought. And it's pretty much a neighbor. I mean, if we found one that was one light year away, and it, you know, that would be insane. But the fact that it's 39, 39 light years sounds like a long way. But geez, we're not even close to leaving the solar system yet. But by the time we are, that's going to be the most likely destination. It's like, wow, that is actually pretty close.
Yeah, that, I think that'll definitely be worth exploring. And I guess if the planets have, like, you know, proper atmospheres and stuff like that, it'll be easier to explore.
Yeah.
But, and the technology will advance by then so that, you know, the people who go there to explore could potentially come back as well, bring back a bunch of weird diseases and, like, kill us all.
The issue with the exploration is the time dilation. That's the issue. If you set off on a mission, it's like a classic sci-fi story. If you set off on a mission to another planet on a sleeper vessel that's, like, close to light speed, by the time you get there, time on Earth would have passed so much more that they would have overtaken you in technology. So what do they call it? Not a generation ship. Like, there's a sci-fi trope about
Right.
You know the one. So you set off at 39. Well, we'll get there in 39 years, lads, because we're traveling at exactly light speed in this vessel.
Yeah, yeah. And then by the time they get there, we've already colonized it and everybody's laughing at them. You fucking caveman, welcome.
Oh, look at this piece of shit ship they got, guys.
Look at the fucking jalopy they showed up in.
Fucking morons.
Fucking idiots.
Send them
Jesus.
Home. I mean, I don't think we'd ever get there. Obviously, we're never going to get there in our lifetime, but we could certainly build a telescope or something to really have a good old peek
them.
At this
get
thing.
Get jealous.
Here's
about
the
them
thing, and right? We look at things under this very, very current view of technology, okay? And that's unfortunately a very poor way to look at things. I think that
science, jeez, I'm sorry.
Science, look, 500 years ago, people would have not have thought the internet, like they mobile phones, like the stuff that we have today is magic to them.
Yeah.
And in 500 years, it'll be the same. I think what we'll find is that it's hard to conceive now what we can do in the future. And I don't think that's going to be, suddenly Star Trek, fast and light travel. I think it'll be stuff that we don't expect. Like, you know, we'll be able to transfer our brains into a machine or machines would have taken over, or we can freeze people or whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? It'll be something weird. So I think that, you know, it's nice to know that there's other planets out there that are in the habitable zone, but bear in mind Mars is in the habitable zone and no one's, you know, we're talking about colonizing that, and that's going to be then again, a lot of Earth is in the habitable zone, but no one wants to live there, you know. Antarctic, like, the oceans,
like, where you put that, hello Antarctic, anybody heard of it? It's
on the topic of the oceans, I wouldn't live under the ocean, that would creep me out, but I would definitely live floating on the ocean in a floating city or
in Waterworld.
Yeah, well, like a water world. Yeah, that'd be cool.
A lot of people have built out onto the ocean in various places, though. Like, you know, a lot of places, like in Dubai and Netherlands and parts of London, they just build out onto they just reclaim land from the water.
You know, like in Jersey, where the movie theater is and stuff, Lewis.
Yeah.
Remember, like, when you came over here, that's all reclaimed as well.
Yeah.
That was
the
sea years ago.
We'll slowly
build out onto it
all over onto the sea. Yeah, just a big floating barge thing. I'm not saying that it's not worth knowing this stuff. This is really, really cool. But as a sort of a cynical kind of, from a cynical viewpoint, there's a lot more still to do here before we consider trying to build something that will go off. And at the moment, 39 light years is...
Man, what more is there to do here, though? We've built all the parking lots and shopping malls we can. We need to build them somewhere else now, Lewis. Jeez. Yeah.
Think of the holiday dollars. The space dollar, that's a big dollar.
Yeah, think about how big Christmas could be on 7 new planets. Holy shit. That's fucking crazy.
Well, it might be that we don't even need more space, is the thing. There's likely to be a point in the future where the global population stabilizes and then perhaps even decreases.
I think a couple of the planets...
Yeah, that's why you need a new planet. It's the only way to persist.
I think what they'll do with a couple of the planets is they'll sort of like... Somebody will buy the planet and be like, nobody's allowed to live here because we're just
going to...
They can't
because of the space treaty that was
signed. Completely pillage it for all of its natural beauty and resources.
No, Sips. Yeah. You can't own shit in space.
But isn't that an interesting concept?
They'll reform that. They'll change it. They'll change it to suit them. Like, when it comes down to it, they're saying that now because there's nowhere worth having
in
space. That's
a good point. There's no money up there.
But as soon as somebody finds, like, a planet that's made out of diamonds or something like that, trust me, like, somebody will be like, oh, well, that one's mine for sure. Nobody else can have that.
Dibs.
I've got to control these fucking diamonds.
Space dibs.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's totally going to happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, just, you have to have, like, some taxation on some of this stuff in order for it to, you know. That was one of the things, wasn't it? Was it Bill Gates was talking a load about like taxing robots or something? Do you remember? Did you read this?
Taxing robots. That's Jesus. Cool. Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah.
So like companies to replace their workers with robots don't have to pay, you know, the tax out to people effectively anymore.
Do you know what I was reading about efficiency and about, well, like one of the issues with the amount of work that we're doing and the amount of return we're getting for the hours we're working is you'd expect us to be getting more efficient as time's going on, but apparently we're getting less efficient. I thought that was interesting. Or we're less productive. I don't know. I can't even remember the article. I probably shouldn't have quoted it, but I definitely read something that was like showing how wages are stagnating, productivity is going down, and you'd expect it to be going up, but it's not. So we're actually spending more time working for the same amount.
I don't think that's actually the case. I think like when you look at like GDP and things like this and productivity, they always go up and they always have done. I mean, that's like
the mystery of declining productivity growth in the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean,
I think a lot of places, though.
We might well not need to colonize anyway, is what I'm saying, because it looks like the population of the Earth might,
no, you're
might
wrong.
Cap
you're wrong.
And then go down.
You're well, wrong.
People will always want to get away from the Earth.
No, you're wrong about that, too.
No, trust me, though. Like, the same way they wanted to get away from Europe back
that's
in the day
true.
As well.
There will be people
gonna,
that want to
They're going to be like, you know what? Well, I know a bunch of people that I met on the internet. We got a little community. We believe in Dildonians, and nobody believes us, and they all laugh at us. And you know what? We built a spaceship, and peace out, motherfuckers. We're out of here. We're going.
Yeah.
We're going to go colonize one of these planets before any of you guys get dibs on it. It's the diamond one. And we're going to create a new society. We're going to break free from the shackles of you guys, and we're going to do our own thing. And then what's going to happen.
Yeah. But the main reason is that unless you can get off your original planet as a species within about, I guess you'd probably want to do it within 100,000 years of you achieving sort of sentience, right? And, you know, you need to do it because otherwise an asteroid's going to hit the planet and your species is going to be wiped out. The only way to future-proof your species is to get out there and start colonizing shit. You have to become...
That's why Mars is important to colonize,
exactly.
Even though it's...
You need some peeps.
I think what they should do actually with Mars is just they should all the prisons on Earth and stuff.
Mars,
they should just
like in
Ghosts
of
nobody
Mars.
Wants to fucking no one wants to fucking live there. Like,
I mean, it needs to be, and this is a little bit of a dystopian sort of scary thing, but it needs to be done kind of by self building robots. You know, we need to get up a factory in space that can mine and build more factories that mine and build stuff. And so, you know, by the time we get to Mars, we'll go there and robots will have covered the entire surface with
concrete,
metal,
luxury apartments.
Concrete, yeah. Big
parking
lots.
We fucked up the programming, guys. They concreted the entire planet. all the good stuff.
They forgot to put down the lines. What's up? We need a. Well, we got to send somebody out there.
Where do I park? There's no lines painted here. Line by 2000
urgent vacancy for
down.
A guy to paint lines.
Just a giant
with
car
the parking park. Lot's not complete
with one Jeez. Space.
I genuinely think that's probably the best. That's the most likely sort of thing, though. I think we have to. I'm a little bit worried. I don't know. This is maybe some crazy paranoia.
Don't worry about
that
it.
There's going to be a limit that the human brain can handle, okay? And so we're going to have to leave it to computers to program and come up with and innovate the next generation of science or discovery. You know, we're going to have to create AIs that can create smarter AIs in order to get to the next advancement tier, right? Of the next research level. I think that there must be a limit on the human brain, you know, being
There's
able
no
to come
limit
up.
On my brain.
I love your technology tree idea with all this. That's good. Like you can tell you play a lot of video games.
Yeah,
as well.
He's going right down the tech tree for AI.
But no, like I don't know that for certain things, yeah, but there's still a lot of things that can be done that we, you know, there's still a lot of things about nature, like on this planet that we don't know about.
Robots and
we're
not
always,
understand
we're always
love.
Finding new things and new ways around things and solutions for stuff. Like I'm sure it's not going to be beyond our means, like when a problem comes up sort of thing. But the problem is now is that everything on Earth is so profit driven that There's not going to be any real advancement that is nothing to do with profit. You know what I mean? Like it'll come down to there's a really good commercial reason for doing something, and then everybody's going to want to do it.
Do you
and
know
there's
what,
going to be
do you know what
huge advancements
me,
towards it.
What scares me when you saying that is, what if we're the Ferengi?
Maybe.
What if
we
actually
are the
Ferengi?
It could be that we're the Ferengi. Like I never really considered it before, but
I think we are.
Now that you mention it, I think there's a good chance we're the Ferengi, and nobody wants to be the Ferengi.
No, they were the dicks of Star Trek.
Everybody wants to be the race that Picard is.
Although I do like my ears being touched. By the way, like
there you
I'm
go. Update
with.
Tinder with that shit.
There you go.
I do. I was watching Star Trek last night. I've got a little evening ritual. I make my kids watch Next Gen with me every evening at about 6 o'clock. I record them off Sci-Fi.
Man, do you know what? That is a good. Thing to
I know,
do
dude.
Like that's your kids are going to be really well rounded from that.
Yeah,
I'm not even joking. I think that's quality family time that they'll remember when they're
I
older.
I think they will. And my eldest is my youngest likes it because we just sit on the sofa and cuddle for an hour. And my eldest likes it because she like the kids love Data. Data is exactly like a child because
I thought you were going to say Dad.
No, they like Data.
The kids love Dad time.
They like Data because he asks questions the same way that they ask questions. And Data is
Deanna,
very much like...
What is the sensation I'm feeling in my genitals? They gave me genitals? Why
it's
did
like
they
that.
Do that?
Yeah, so that they see Data say things like
Data's
he has a cat.
Fully functional.
Yeah, so and they'll say to the cat, you know, they'll say, "Oh, your cat's probably dreaming." He's like, So then he will sit and watch the cat asleep. He's watching the cat. I've been watching Spud sleep for 2 hours.
Was there an episode where he accidentally pet the cat too hard or something? Because he's like, he wasn't like aware
this isn't
of his limits.
Of Mice and Men.
Oh. Maybe that's what I'm getting confused with. But I just like, I seem to recall there was a controversy around Data. Not like out in the real world. I mean, like within like the confines of Star Trek: The Next Generation, where he like almost killed a cat.
Oh wow!
And everybody on board was like, "Data, what the fuck? Like, maybe you shouldn't be looking after a cat."
I don't remember that episode.
I don't know my limits. I'm stronger than I thought I was. I was just trying to give Mr. Cuddles a really good stroke. And
now
almost broke his neck.
Mr. Cuddles can't walk anymore.
Mr. Cuddles is the tripod now.
Yeah, he says what he's doing all the time. He asks questions all the time. He's very straightforward. Whatever he's thinking, he'll say it. And so he's perfect for the kids to follow. He's just like a character in a kid's movie.
That is kids in a nutshell, always saying what they're doing. Holy crap, I never realized until just now. That's exactly what they do. It's crazy.
So Data is like the kid. So when they watch it, they fucking love Data. The Data-centric episodes, they super love.
But
we watched
that's
some
good.
Crappy episodes here. Like real mid-season filler episodes. Like
real stinkers, yeah.
Like there's one where, oh God, I stopped this one 10 minutes in. Beverly goes back to her home. She's like, I think she's Scottish, is her clan, the Howard clan, okay? Goes back to her grandmother's house, who's passed away. There's like all this old memorabilia she's looking at, and there's this little cast iron lamp that's lit. And this mysterious old man comes to the house and tells her, puts the lamp out while she's upstairs. And she comes out and says, get out of my house. What are you doing? I've inherited this house. This place is mine. He goes, oh, that lamp's brought nothing but misery to your family for generations. And she says,
no.
Don't turn out that lamp. It's the Howard lamp. He goes, it's cursed. The lamp is cursed. All the women in your house. And she turns it back on and he says, all right, I'm going, but it's on your heed. And I thought, all right. So he leaves, and then she turns the lamp back on. And I was like, this looks terrible. I turned on the synopsis, and it said, Beverly Crusher is haunted by an 800-year-old ghost. And I was like, fuck this. I was like, kids, you're going to bed. We're not watching this episode. It sounds like ass.
Beverly Crusher is a support character who should never have any character development or progression. You know, she just needs to turn up every once in a while and be like, Cap'n, you have to see this. You're a leper, Captain. It's not right. It's not right for your dick and your balls to be fused together like that, Captain. We're going to have to do it. Data, get me the scalpel, Data. Jesus Christ, what the fuck is wrong with my genitals? Jeez. You know, like, that's her role.
The space scalpel.
Not to have a fucking whole, you know, family lineage thing where she has to go back.
Like, it's awful.
Nobody gives a fuck, you know. Same with Will Crusher. Like, who cares how he got there and who his dad is and stuff? Just fucking, you know, learn how to fly the fucking ship and shut up. Like, that's it. That's all you got to do. You know, leave the cool stories to Riker and Data and
Worf.
You know,
Worf's
occasionally
Geordi
LaForge as well. You know,
God, do you know what? All right, Geordi. By the way, I think that his character is interesting. He gets in this relationship. I think you guys remember this. This was like a multiple episode story arc. So at one point they need to save the Enterprise, and he has to create a holodeck simulation of the woman who invented the warp drive, or this particular version of the warp drive.
Yeah.
So he creates this holodeck version of her. It builds a personality for her from its database.
Yeah, and he starts to fall in love with
it. And he falls in love with it. And then he meets the real one, and she's a real kind of a bitch and not interested because, you know, she's just like, look, just let's get the job over with. I'm not into you. Can we just hurry up? I want to go home. And he's like, oh, man. Yeah. And he's super sad.
This is the rapiest episode of TNG, by the way.
He is that. But the thing is, Gene Roddenberry apparently was a bit of a shit, to put it bluntly. And the reason that Gates McFadden and a bunch of other women have left Star Wars over the years is because of him and his comments and stuff like that. So, I mean, he has that episode where... I read a really good article highlighting all the terrible, especially in the earlier Star Treks, the terrible attitudes that Gene Roddenberry has towards women. And I think he was just a complete shit. Because he was like a hero of mine for Star Trek. But like all of my heroes, it turns out they're assholes.
You should have pictured him taking a dump, man. Then you wouldn't have held him in such high esteem.
I think that they knew this about him beforehand.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that
it's like a lot of. I think in the '70s, in order to work in television, in Britain or in the UK, you just had to be either a molester or a drug addict or a drunk or something. That was how you got in. You couldn't get in just with talent. I was like, hey, have you done anything inappropriate in your career? Oh, yeah, I pinch women's asses all the time. Sometimes I beat them up. Okay, yeah, you can be an exec producer.
Man, do people actually pinch people's butts anymore?
Like, I do.
Do you?
Yeah, but only my wife's. And I don't pinch
pinch. You physically pinch her butt?
I give it a squeeze.
How big is the pinch?
Well, I don't use I don't use a mechanical pincher.
No, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the mechanical pinch.
Is it like a little thumb and finger pinch, or is it like a thumb and it's like a whole hand?
I don't. You know when you pinch someone and you pinch just a tiny bit of skin, that really hurts, right? I don't.
Yeah,
do that.
It does, yeah.
I'm talking like, imagine if you were squeezing a tomato like to see how ripe it was. Like, I'm like testing the ripeness of that butt. That's the kind of pinch we're talking about. Like a
That's not really. That's a grab.
Yeah. That's a grab. That's not a pinch. Like, I thought a pinch was always like to like, because you see it in the old like cliche movies where the woman like frightens, like leaps away from you.
Because that hurts. Getting pinched fucking hurts,
horrible.
Man. Like, it doesn't matter.
It does.
Pinching is one of the most evil things you can do to someone, honestly. I think
it is. You know where it really hurts? Pinch like behind the top of your arm.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like where your, oh. you, like well, where your bingo wings
thigh.
Are?
Inside oh, of the thigh really there and the bingo wings.
Why would you do
oh,
that?
Oh, it's so horrible. Oh,
well, when you're in school, though, that you, like, I used, like, we used to pinch people, like, at school, like, as a joke sort of thing. So, like, if somebody was standing outside in the smoking area, and you'd sneak up behind them and, like, you know, pinch the back of their leg or the back of their arm or something. Just, like, as, like, a... Hey,
kids
what's
up?
Yeah,
mean.
Kids do
They're
dumb
really
shit
mean.
Like that, though, right?
Someone yeah. pinches me, I'm going to punch him in the fucking mouth. That's it.
Now, yeah, if I get pinched as an adult, look out. Like, I'm going to fucking go into rage mode. I don't want to be pinched at all. Like, actually, I've got like, a sphere around me, like my own personal space. I don't want you in that.
You get
like,
in there, anyone, it's go much. Time. Yeah.
That's it. That's it. It's over if you step into that area. So pinching, whatever, forget it. I don't want to know about it. But yeah, like it's such a thing though. It's like a cliche, isn't it? Like, hey, hot stuff, like pinch a girl's butt or whatever. Like, no, nobody actually does that. Like, it's impossible, right? Like, did people used to do that in like the 50s?
I don't know.
Or like nobody does it now, right? Or do people still anyone with any pinching stories? No? I mean, I don't. I've never pinched anyone.
No, I've never pinched anybody.
I pinch girls' asses all the time.
Of course oh, you right. do.
So okay. many.
It's always one.
Yeah. Every restaurant I'm in, I'm like, hey, yeah. baby.
Pitch.
Yeah.
Oh, it's yeah.
the pitchy
guy.
Another one of those whiskey smooth sliders or whatever. Fuck, I don't know.
Pinch, Jeez. Pinch. Yeah, no.
Jesus. It's not Benny Hill.
Yeah, that's it. That's Benny Hill, isn't it? Running after like a column of women trying to pinch their butts.
Yeah, I mean, he was like pretty gross, wasn't
Who?
He? Like, oh, Benny Hill.
Oh, he. Yeah, I've looked he it up. Like I figured, like when Yew Tree was happening. For any American viewers who don't know what Yew Tree is, was it a massive investigation the police did into the fact that most of the people, it seems, that were on television in the 70s and 80s were rapists or child molesters or just awful people. Alongside that, and I felt Benny Hill was a fucking shoo-in for Yew Tree. Had to be.
Yeah.
Like, he was on my list at number one.
All the Hallmark characteristics,
right.
doesn't he?
Rolf Just... Harris was not on my list of potentials. Benny Hill,
no.
right on there. And it turns out, like, Benny Hill, I haven't heard anything bad about him. I think... Because he was just, his TV show was perverted, right? And kind of twisted. But he apparently just wasn't. He was like a nice guy. But all the guys who yeah. seemingly had wholesome... And pleasant shows, they were the perverts. Fucking Rolf,
yeah.
Rolf Harris, dude. The guy with the most
Bill
innocent...
Bill Cosby, allegedly, as well.
Yeah, this is. I think so. The more innocent they seem, the less innocent they am. That's my take on it.
I got you.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Right, well, that is all we got time for today, because we're going to make it a short one.
What about Bodega?
Me and P-Flex need to go have a lie down. I think if you've done a Bodega, we can do
I got
one. Yeah.
I've got a pretty sweet and short Bodega right here.
All
wicked.
Right.
But,
Let's
wicked,
do it.
Wicked.
Because of the criticisms of the Spanish language intro, I've had to go for English. I don't know how to say 16.
Okay.
Bodega Park.
What? I can try to say it.
Okay.
What is it?
16.
16.
Is it DHSS?
No idea. You tell me what you think it is and I'll pronounce it. My pronunciation of Spanish
okay.
words is incredible.
It is. I think
apparently.
It's Bodega Park DHSS.
DHSS.
Beautiful. DHS. Bodega Park DHS. Sniper class, you will come to attention, barked the burly instructor. He had the self-assurance of a toddler, stood, hands on hips, on the brow of a low ridge at the firing range on Cavell 7. 6, sorry. His clothes were so khaki-coloured that they all... I don't want to get my Cavells mixed up. His clothes were so khaki-coloured that they almost acted as camouflage against the backdrop of the dull brown sky. His uniform fluttered in the strong wind that was battering them all. The windsock, a few metres behind him, was pulled completely horizontal, but it dipped suddenly as the breeze died for just a moment before spiralling vertically as a strong breeze ripped it upwards, then back to horizontal. The wind was nuts. As ordered, the 12 young recruits snapped to attention. The instructor descended the small ridge and began walking back and forth before them, inspecting them with menace. My name is Torek Merbel, and the instructor here at the Kuvale Royal Sniper Academy. You have been selected by your local cadet school because you've shown aptitude beyond the norm. However, he said, turning sharply and wagging a finger at them, what your school considers aptitude is not what I consider aptitude. What you are right now is scrub stains who couldn't hit the broadside of a herd of whoopals. You shoot worse than Berflanian shock surrender troops. This caught the attention of a young man named Bodega, who began daydreaming.
I heard of those fellers. He thought my daddy told him back on our Whoople Ranch. Whoople Ranch, huh? Ever hit the broadside of one? Snapped the instructor. Sir, I didn't say nothing, pleaded Bodega, mystified. Why don't you tell me all about Berflanian shock surrender troops, since you know so much, if you will, Cadet Bodega? Well, sir, stammered Bodega, way I heard it, Berflanian's got a whole mess of folks down on their world, and when it comes to fighting, they just try to overwhelm the enemy with numbers. The number of Berflanians all trying to surrender is what it is, sir. Would you bless us with your critique of this tactic, Cadet? Asked Tork Merble, squinting at the young man before him with mock interest. I think if them Berflanians just had some sack to them, they might be able to fight instead of acting like a bunch of Dildonians about it, sir. Fight, huh? I see. Young Cadet Bodega here clearly understands warfare. Perhaps you can give us a demonstration of your abilities, young General Bodega, laughed Merble, grabbing Bodega by the collar and encouraging him with great vigor to make friends with the firing position on the ground next to them. Grab that standard issue Mark I Shrovian sniper weapon, Cadet, shouted Merble, so close to his ear that a tiny glob of spittle shot its way inside. Yes, sir, said Bodega, slowly, before calmly pressing the butt of the rifle into his shoulder and supporting it with his arms. Do you see that target at the far end of the range, Cadet? Asked Merble, feigning concern. Sir, I could see it just fine, sir, said Bodega. The wound brought a tear to Bodega's eye, but he ignored it, and the tear rolled quickly across his forehead, leaving a cold trail in his skin. Chamber one round of standard-issue Shrovian 10mm sniper heart caliber, if you please, said Merble. Bodega chambered the round. He looked at the target, which was barely visible at a distance of 6 kilometers. He began calming his breathing. Smooth breaths, in, out, in, out. Don't panic, don't snatch at the trigger, don't let Merble put you off. Think I'm gonna try and put you off, huh? Whispered Merble in his ear. I know you think you're hot flarv, boy. I've seen thousands of cadets in my time, and they all think the same thing. They think they'll shut me up by hitting that target, and I'll pin a medal on their chest and I'll retire on the spot. That's what they all think, Cadet Bodega. But ain't even one of them come close. And with that, Marble stood to his full height and grinned a real scrub-eating grin. Bodega fixed the old man with a hard stare. I'm thinking when I make this shot, you'll give me a pass and let me skip this class so I never have to see your face again, you flarvin' chaffle munger. There ain't nothing you could teach me, thought Bodega. Merble knelt down, his face only inches from Bodega's. It's a deal, said Merble, his voice almost lost on the wind. Bodega said nothing. He turned back to look down the rifle and its target. There was a reason the sniper school was on Cuvel. The huge planet revolved at a fantastic rate, with a day-night cycle only 3 hours long. As a result, it had extremely strong winds, and its Coriolis effect was off the charts. Add to that, it's stronger than normal gravity, and it was the worst possible conditions for a sniper. You'd do well to hit a target on Cuvel, the saying went. It was not a popular saying. Fire when ready, far face, said Merble. Bodega stared down the scope of the rifle. It was grainy, old. The rifles they were using were ex-military for a reason. They'd seen a lot of use. The barrels were worn, the sights were worn, the triggers were temperamental. It don't matter none to me, old man, Bodega thought. I learned to shoot with a homemade rifle my daddy gave me anyhow. Using the scope, he looked for signs of which ways the wind was blowing. Over 6 kilometers, the wind would be traveling every direction imaginable. The bullet he would fire would be struck from all sides by buffeting breezes, pulled downwards by gravity, and suffered crazy deviation from the Coriolis effect. He had to take it all into account when he pulled that trigger. Add to this the target itself. 6 kilometers hence, high atop a dull gray post, a small metal plate had been affixed. It was circular, it was pristine, and it was only 10 centimeters in diameter. Ain't nobody ever hit the target, Cadet Bodega, said Merble, squatting beside him. Hope you got a spare, said Bodega. Behind him, the class laughed softly. Go ahead, hotshot. Whenever you're ready to show us what the big mouth leads to, you just go ahead and yank that trigger, said Merble. Bodega took one more look. He sensed the path of the bullet. He visualized it striking the target and knocking it clean off its post. He felt for the trigger, took a deep breath, held it. Firing, said Bodega. He squeezed the trigger. No sooner had the observers felt the faint concussive shock of the weapon firing than, with a colossal crack, the barrel of the rifle split clean in two, and the entire weapon fell apart in Bodega's hands. Merble let out a huge whoop of laughter and began laughing so hard his face turned bright red. The rifle's a dud, he screamed, before shrieking with laughter again. 7 seconds later, his laughter was cut short by a distant metallic ping. All eyes turned to the target, which fell silently to the ground. Works fine, said Bodega, standing and extending his hand to Merble. Sir, I believe we had a deal, he said calmly. Merble, trembling with disbelief, reached out and shook Bodega's hand. You're excused, Cadet Bodega, he mumbled. Bodega turned to his former classmates. Been a pleasure, boys. See you at
ciao. And with that, he strode back towards the barracks where, with the rest of his squad absent, he would spend his newly found free time masturbating furiously. The end.
Wow.
Bravo.
What a bodega.
What a bodega.
Oh, it's nice to have some from the past. A bodega from the past.
A prequel. It's a hell of a he's the best sniper, not only at that sniper school.
Yeah, you gotta elaborate on that point, you know. He didn't just get those skills from nowhere. He didn't get those skills out of a Cracker Jack box. Did he? Now?
Nope.
No. No, he didn't.
It's weird. I was talking in the story about how windy it was, and today it's windy as Flav. Have you seen it out there?
Yeah, we're getting like a tail end of a hurricane.
Yeah,
Dennis or something.
Doris.
Like Doris.
But it's insane.
It's the same. It was fucking super windy here this morning and raining like a motherfucker. Like, it just looked like it was going to be the worst day ever. 5 minutes later, it's glorious. It's fucking sunny. There's no wind.
I think that's because you're in the eye of the storm now. It's directly overhead.
We must be right in the, right in the center of it. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Good place to be. At least I can actually go out and suntan a bit.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to go.
Yeah,
Thanks for listening to Trifles this week, everybody.
Lewis is sick, so we're stopping.
We'll be back next week with some more.
I'm fine. I'm going to carry on. I'm going to carry on going. So see you guys later, and I'll fill for the rest of the...
Okey-doke.
To hit cool. Our, no, I'm just joking.
Bye.
Bye.